Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up! It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
Episode 125, we are here, we are live, that rhymed. Pancakes the Power Slam Show, we're going to have a ton of good time tonight. SummerSlam Roundtable, we got the deck stacked tonight. I believe this is the biggest roundtable that we've had. I think the biggest that we've had so far. Our record was 5, but now, hey, we got 6 strong, including myself. SummerSlam Roundtable, and that deserves a Dusty Rhodes moment. We got 6 strong here, Pancakes and Power Slams getting funky like a monkey, live and in living color, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's go through the list of people on the roundtable tonight. First, we have, once again, from the Bleacher Report, we have Julio Romano. Don't call me Corky. How are you tonight, sir?
Present, loud, and ready to roll. Yes, I'm pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Absolutely doing fantastic. Next we have from whatculture.com, we have the infamous, dun-dun-dun, Andy Socek. How are you tonight, sir?
Hey, doing good. Thanks for having me back.
Awesome. Next, we have social commentator from Clock Radio Speakers Podcast, the wrestling mind himself, Armand.
Chris, what's going on, man? Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely, man. And we have Pancakes and Power Slams analyst, host of the Ryan's Den segment of Pancakes and Power Slams, Ryan Fuqua, tonight.
Hey, Quay Breslin, what's up? Ready to go. Everything's brand new. New belt, new champ, new logo, new season. I'm excited.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And, of course, without further ado, we have our Pancakes and Power Slams co-host, correspondent, Derek, ready to make it happen tonight.
The new Tuesday Night Titans. This is Pancakes and Power Slams. Ladies and gentlemen, this is where you need to be. It's Tuesday night. We got a round table, a lot going on tonight. Chris Featherstone leading the way. Let's get it started.
Absolutely. And we're going to have a very, very interesting, and I'm excited about this. Of course, this is episode 125, and every week we have a segment at the end called Flavor of the Week, Random Wrestling Topic. Tonight, each of us have our 3 favorite mid-card matches in SummerSlam history. It should be very, very exciting. And one thing that the guests do not know, and this is a surprise. Before I go to the surprise, I do want to make mention early in the show that we have a newest member of the Pancakes and Power Slams interview series. We got an interview coming up, so stay tuned in the next week or two for that to be officially announced, confirmed it today, got an interview coming up the next few weeks, so I'm very, very excited. So stay tuned. This week or next week or the week after, we'll make an official announcement of when that interview is going to be. I'm excited to interview this wrestler, and it's going to be very, very interesting. What the guests do not know today is that they are all on the hot seat, because I have a list of trivia questions here, and we are going to play, as we do our SummerSlam and our Raw commentary tonight, we are also going to play Stump the Guest. We are going to stump the guest. So I have a list of names here, and we're going to see who gets the most right by the end of the night. And if you win, you get the bragging rights for running the Stump the Host, Stump the Guest panelists, Stump the Panelist trivia tonight. And so if you get the most right, you'll be champion, and you'll wear the $429.99 replica of the new title that came out yesterday, which is $420 too much. And so we'll get to that later as far as that new belt is concerned. So without further ado, let's put Andy on the hot seat. Ooh. First. So, Andy,
all right. Yes.
What was Sean Waltman known as in the GWF? What was Sean Waltman known as in the GWF?
You know, I want to say Lightning Kid.
You are...
Lightning Kid, is that correct?
You are correct. Absolutely.
Yes.
1 point for Andy.
I almost said Pegasus Kid, but that was Benoit, so...
Yeah, that was Benoit in Japan. He was Pegasus Kid. So we're gonna have that all night, and so everybody is on the hot seat. So get prepared for that. All right, without further ado, let's get to SummerSlam. We're going to start off with the random, very, very random and impromptu and unadvertised match between two people who were just. Who have became relative nobodies in the WWE, former WWE and ECW simultaneous champion RVD goes against a very, very struggling, floundering Cesaro in the pre-show, and goes to further show how much he was floundering. Of course, well, he had a hiccup of a win on Raw, which we'll talk about. But just his character is just fading fast, and I don't know how this is going to recover. But RVD beats Cesaro randomly out of nowhere. So, Armand, what do you feel about that match?
I was very whatever about it. I guess when they both came down the aisle, I was like, really? Why? You know, it just didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't really make sense. You know, RVD is the guy who, you know, I think he's in that spot where it was Ziggler and even Jeff Hardy to a degree, where no matter what he does, the fans are going to love him. So, you know, I'm cool with him putting young guys over, still get wins here and there, ultimately, you know, building himself up to, you know, put a younger guy over. I'm cool with that. But Cesaro's in that tough spot where, you know, he should have been – should have been a face after WrestleMania, because his Battle Royal win reeked of a face. The swing was over, and then, you know, the writers did the mistake of listening to the Smarks and saying, oh, it'd be cool if Cesaro was with Heyman. And it was great for the moment. You know, I think the WWE and just our culture in general is very moment-based, like let's create a really cool moment. And that Cesaro-Heyman moment after WrestleMania was great. But, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, it just didn't make sense. Cesaro should have been a face leading up to a Cesaro-Brock match at some point, which would have been really cool. Or, you know, they could have struggled and Heyman's super heel and Cesaro wants to be a baby face. And they want, you know, they're kind of having a struggle between doing what's right and what's not. And I mean, they just could have went a whole bunch of different ways. But I say all that to say that, you know, Cesaro's kind of in a tough spot. I love Cesaro. But, you know, just to kind of see him there cool that he's on TV, but he's one of the guys. Their roster is so strong right now that I wish that there was, you know, just better writing for them to do something with him without them waiting to put him in the championship picture. You know, he could still be IC. He could still be U.S. He could feud with Rusev. There's a lot of things for him to do, and the fact that he's doing nothing is kind of frustrating as a fan of his.
Ryan, how does Cesaro bounce back?
Oh, man. That's a good question. Little spoiler alert, watching main event tonight, seeing him and Sheamus had a little one-on-one go at it. Nothing physical, but I don't know, getting back in that U.S. title picture, because they never talk about him being U.S. title holder, really. So I think maybe getting that title back, I don't know, making it the Swiss title or something. Maybe that might help.
Probably because he had the U.S. championship with Oksana. And
yeah.
Oksana is nowhere to be found. So, Andy, did you care about RVD Cesaro?
You know, it's one of those matches that just kind of depressed me in a way, because it's like, this is so pointless. You know, they just threw them together, and they're two guys who deserve better, especially Cesaro. You know, I mean, with, like, RVD, I'm not the biggest fan, but if you're going to bring him in and pay him, like, you know, do something with him. Make somebody like Cesaro go over on him to get something out of it. So, yeah, it didn't do much for me.
RVD Cesaro, Julio.
Honestly, I didn't even watch that match. I just read the results afterwards, but I'm a big, big Cesaro fan, and everything that's happening with him right now is just a huge disappointment. I've never been a real RVD fan, so when they bring guys like him back, okay, yeah, they can get some cheers and stuff. They, you know, they're from the vintage or I don't know what, but at that point, he should have been the one losing and bringing Cesaro over. I mean, he's great. He has a great physique, great moveset. He was on his way, and then writers just blew it. So I'm not giving up, but, you know, I didn't pay attention to that match because it was not interesting to me.
Since you didn't pay attention to the pre-show match, you get the next question. Who managed Hulk Hogan when he was a heel in the WWE?
Wasn't it the Wizard or whatever his name was, the Grand Wizard.
You pencil neck geek.
That's right. Freddie Blassie. Yeah.
Come on.
Freddie Blassie, that's right. That's right.
Derek,
I even
RVD
have the picture
Cesaro
in my head.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Calling people pencil neck geeks.
That's right.
Derek, RVD Cesaro, what do you got?
You know, it was one of those and Cesaro, I mean, they were kind of fillers. That match was a filler. But you couldn't have a almost better filler. Cesaro is still one of those, you want him to do great. He was on the path to be something great. Now he's got to start from the beginning. And you have RVD. Nobody has legwork like RVD. He's still stunned. I love to see RVD. I'm an RVD fan all the way. It was okay to start off SummerSlam with that. It was unannounced, surprise. Here's these two. Let's do something with them. So I don't think it was a total loss. They had time. They had airtime. I don't know what it did for their personal gains or careers, but it was there. So, you know, you like to see both of them, especially, you know, RVD on his way out, I guess. But good way to start SummerSlam, even though it was mediocre SummerSlam, but it was, they were there. I'll remember it. Maybe, maybe not.
I was totally opposed to RVD Cesaro. First of all, it was unannounced pre-show match. There was no build to it. It's SummerSlam. I mean, you need to have this spectacular. This is the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. You have to have some type of credible pre-show match at least. What bothered me so much is the fact that you have one of the MVPs, or two of the MVPs of the entire 2014, which is the Usos, their spot at SummerSlam, one of the second, well, according to the WWE, the second biggest paycheck of the year, you have them as lumberjacks. You had Usos out there. You had Dust Busters, whoever they, whatever their name is going to be, Goldust and Stardust. You had the Wyatt, Rowan and Harper out there, and you had a feud kind of churning between Rowan and Harper and Mark Henry and Big Show. So why not have those four teams be in a four-way match? That's eight men right there that you could have utilized on the pre-show. Instead, we get RVD beating Cesaro, and it was nothing that came from it. It just didn't make any sense. Ryan, AJ Lee, used to date what current ROH star?
Jay Lethal.
1 point for Ryan. Jay Lethal is indeed.
I was so sure about that. So sure.
Absolutely. All right, next we got Dolph Ziggler defeating The Miz. I was so shocked and surprised for this. I had to watch this match again because I was watching it but not really watching it because it was one of those smart moments. Like, oh, there's no way that Dolph Ziggler, because next pay-per-view is Night of Champions, and The Miz is the ambassador, so to speak, one of the ambassadors of the WWE, and he's Hollywood, and he's Marine 3 and the Marine 4 and Christmas movies, and they want a belt on him. And I'm thinking all these things, and all of a sudden, on top of that, Dolph Ziggler is one of those guys that I think Triple H kind of trolls because he knows he's going to have that IWC following. Granted, he was a flavor of the month for a while after his concussion and failed title run because of his concussion last year. He started to die down as far as interest is concerned, but of course he's one of those guys who has the athletic ability that the IWC love. And so it seems like Triple H will use him more of a trolling, from a trolling standpoint, of having him reach that glass ceiling and never break through it. And we've seen that really in the past year and a half almost. But for some reason, he won the match, even, you know, a few weeks after The Miz won and really tried to build his character. And to me, it just really shows that they really don't have much for The Miz. I don't know. That might be a Triple H thing, too, because last report I heard back in 2011 when Miz won the title and lost it, there was something that went on as far as a bad spot between him and Truth or something like that, and Triple H just kind of pulled the plug altogether on a Miz main event run. But it just doesn't seem like Triple H has The Miz's best interest in mind. And I don't know. For him to have this Hollywood character, to first be overshadowed by Jericho, then to lose to Jericho on a Raw, then to kind of feud with Ziggler, and then to lose to Ziggler cleanly on the Raw, and then to lose to Ziggler again on SummerSlam, I don't know. Derek, what is Miz's character really good for at this point?
Miz's character is good for a few things. You know, he's almost got an entrance now that I could almost compare to Y2J. It's like how it has the Hollywood and helicopters, it stops, and awesome. That is awesome. I mean, that is a great entrance. I'm not too concerned about what WWE. I think The Miz is going to be able to hold his own. Good for Ziggler. I was kind of glad he won that match because they need to pump more guys. They need the mid-cards to be a lot more exciting than they were. And to have something like this to happen, I think, could work in both of their favors. Miz is going to be doing Hollywood acting and blah, blah, blah. So maybe he's going to be gone, kind of like how Chris Jericho's here, then gone, here, then gone, here, then gone, and but fulfill his contract, of course. But, however, I don't think it's going to hurt the Miz that much. This is going to be a pretty decent feud going forward, and I think it's going to be something great. I mean, I think The Miz has his cards in order, and so does Dolph Ziggler. I don't see too much action out of this.
Armand, were you satisfied with the finish?
Yeah, I was cool with it. Yeah, I was cool with it. I thought I agree that both Miz and Ziggler, I'm not mad at their spots. Honestly, I thought that his entrance was very Hollywood Rock-ish.
Yes.
I was like, wait, is The Rock coming out?
Absolutely.
But yeah, I'm cool with where they are now, and I agree that the mid-card, again, they have a really good roster that they can really do a lot of things with, and then when you look at who they've got in NXT and who they're bringing into NXT, like this time in the next 18 to 24 months, you know, the E's roster should just be incredible, you know. So, I mean, they've got so many guys. If it's honestly, if the title, I don't know. Well, let me ask y'all this. Like, so if the title sort of gets hot-shotted every couple months to, like, so many different guys, like, do you guys think that that's going to that devalues the title, or does that make things interesting where, you know, you're not sure, you know, who's going to have the IC title in the next 2 or 3 months?
I can answer that. I think, honestly, seeing the writing on the wall for this, I think the title is going to rotate a lot in these next few months. I don't know why. Maybe it's something to do with Ziggler and Miz, but at least if it, even if it's between the two of them, I got a feeling it's going to rotate. And I think that U.S. title is the one that's going to kind of stay on guys for, like you said, 6 months at a time, 8 months at a time. But I don't know why. It's not – I don't like it, but I think that's how it'll go.
I think it's going to I wonder. I have a feeling that The Miz is going to get his championship back. Granted, like, I'm a big fan of his. I've always been a fan of his. I've written so many things about him. He's just like, well, me. And I want that coat. And he's married to Maryse. I mean, come on. She's like from where I live, you know. She's hot. She's beautiful. She's exposure. I don't know. Bring them all together, and you know.
And she's Canadian, right, Julio?
Yeah, she comes from where I come from, exactly the same place. So, I mean, of course, I'm going to support them. But I got a feeling from what we saw on Raw with Ric Flair, he's going to have something to do with it. You know how he is. He's going to screw Dolph Ziggler down the road, and because I was really looking forward to the Sheamus Miz unification thing they were rumoring in the last month. So I think the U.S. title is going to disappear. That's for sure. It's completely useless, and the Intercontinental Championship. That's the thing that's been around WWE for so long. So we'll see how it goes, but this is
Julio,
not over
yet. I respectfully completely disagree with you, because I do not want to see a unification match in the slightest. I don't want to see.
I do. I've been waiting for it for so long.
There's so much depth, just like Armand said. There's so much depth in the mid card that how dare the WWE think about having a unification match? Because first of all, I still don't like the unification of the world titles, because it doesn't give someone like a Cody Rhodes or a Damian Sandow or a Dolph Ziggler or a Miz. None of them are going to even taste the World Heavyweight Championship in the next 2 years, at least. None of them are. And I firmly believe. Ryback, even someone like a Ryback, none of them are going to taste it, because it's such a face of the WWE title now that I don't think that Vince or Tripp or Steph are going to feel comfortable really trying to put the belt on people like that and hope that they draw. I don't think that belt is so kind of upper echelon now, and if the World Heavyweight Championship was still around, you would see better pushes from a Ryback or a Ziggler from a world title standpoint. And the thing is, they still get recognized as world champions. Granted, somebody like Mark Henry too. Someone like Mark Henry, he'll never be world champion. If the World Championship was still around, yes, yeah, someone like a Rusev, you know, build his character up to possibly being world champion, world heavyweight champion. That belt still
Reigns
has prestige to it.
Now.
Exactly. Another one. Roman Reigns is world heavyweight champion. But I don't see, with the exception of Roman Reigns, I don't see anybody else that I said touching the world championship at least for 18 months. At least 18 months.
Well,
would anybody agree
so
with that?
It's always been. It's always been that way in the past, and it worked for 50 years, and it's like that in most sports. I mean, there's not 10,000 Stanley Cups. There's one, and if you're good enough, you're going to get it. If you're a Rick Rude or a Jake Roberts, well, you're going to be loved or the best heel ever, but if you get lucky, you're going to get it. Miz has been world champion, so has Dolph Ziggler. They have tons of stuff to do. Roman Reigns, that's who they're building right now. And I like Brock Lesnar as the world champion. We're not supposed to see the world champion every single week. It's stupid. It should be as it always been. And if you have to pay to go see the world champion, and if he appears every odd show or every so other week, that's the way it should be. You're going to pay to see him. You're going to see everyone
that's
else.
That's exactly why I think the World Heavyweight Championship should still be in existence. If the World Heavyweight Championship would still be in existence, you can build Night of Champions, you can build Hell in a Cell around that world champion, and Brock Lesnar could have time away, and people won't be kind of clamoring and making some type of, you know, brouhaha about, you know,
right.
Where's the world champion, part-time world champion? If the World Heavyweight Championship was still around, they can totally build pay-per-views around that, and it will still work successfully. Brock Lesnar don't have to be there for 2 months. Anybody else can chime in?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you in that sense, but also I think they should just elevate either the U.S. title or the Intercontinental title to that level. I just feel there needs to be something separating the U.S. and the Intercontinental title in the sense that, like, you don't really know which one is higher than the other.
Well, back in the day, there was the European Championship was like a third-tier title. There was a difference between the two. Now they had the U.S. and Intercontinental because the shows were separate rosters. But if you're going to have both of them around, you have to defer. There has to be a difference between the two. Which one's better, you know? Which one's worth
European
more?
European Championship. You know? Let's go down the line. Good or bad decision to have the European Championship? Derek?
It was kind of silly. I mean, I can see why they had it, but I didn't see much point behind it, really.
Armand?
Good. And bring back the TV title as well. Long live 10-minute match with Lord Steven Regal.
Oh, wow. Tom Zink. Ryan, European title.
Yes. I mean, the first few title reigns were Hall of Famers, and then I think what did Shane McMahon just like gave it to Midian, and then it just went to crap. So
it went to hell.
I think Jeff Jarrett giving it to Mark Henry was bad too.
Yeah, I guess I got to say in the long run, no good.
No good.
Yeah,
Julio.
Yeah.
Well, Intercontinental Championship is kind of both North and South America, if you focus. But I guess European, if you're going to go global, maybe have, I guess U.S. title, European title, but would it be for, like, cruiserweights or would it be for you know, would it just be thrown in there for extra titles? I don't know. I want it back for pure historical vintage purposes, but besides that, I don't know what they'd do with it since they barely have anything to do with the U.S. title right now. So,
how about we bring back, before we get to Andy, how about we bring back Rebellion and Insurrection and have the European Championship be the championship of those pay-per-views? Andy?
You know, that's actually kind of along my lines of thinking, because I think the original concept behind it was that it was going to be, you know, defended in Europe, so when they go on tours in the UK and whatnot, that they could defend it there, which I like that, but when you bring it stateside and it's just a third title, it just kind of defeats the purpose of only defending it in another country.
Yeah. Speaking of titles, Paige defeats AJ, and we'll continue with you, Andy. But before we get to Andy, Derek, who were the new Rockers?
Leif Cassidy and Marty Jannetty.
Ho, ho, ho. Point for Derek. Leif Cassidy, a.k.a. who?
Al Snow.
Absolutely. Yes. So, Andy, Paige defeats AJ. Was this a shock for you?
I wouldn't say it was a shock, except for the fact that she beat her cleanly, you know, pretty decisively within, like, 5 minutes. I thought she was going to have to do some sort of shenanigans to get one up on her. So I was pleasantly surprised, though, I would say.
Anybody else surprised?
I was surprised. That was a welcome surprise for me. Yeah. I like Paige. Paige is good.
AJ's checked out, like you said, many times.
Armand, surprised?
Paige?
Very surprised. I loved the ending. I loved the counter out of the Black Widow. I was not expecting that. They have built up. They've actually built up AJ's finisher to be pretty, pretty unbeatable or uncounterable, and if that's even a word. So the counter into the DDT, which was kind of similar to what they did the night after WrestleMania, I loved that. So, yeah, I'm not mad at it.
Armand, the first Raw was held where?
Manhattan Center, New York.
Indeed, absolutely. I was very surprised about this Paige thing. I loved it, though. It was a good surprise. I've said this week after week after week on the show. AJ can go away and far, far away to me, to be honest with you, and I'll be totally okay with it because I just don't feel that her heart is in the WWE right now. I just don't. You can just tell. It just seems like she's on borrowed time. It just seems like she's just going through the motions. I just don't see that passion in AJ. Like she did when her first Divas title reign. It was long, and you can tell her passion was in there. She's a phenomenal wrestler. She always has been. But it just seems like she's just there. They're just kind of plugging her as a face. I think she's a perfect person to lift up AJ. I mean, not AJ, but Paige as a competitor. I mean, she's only 22. She turned 22 at SummerSlam, actually. So she's got, I mean, at least 15 years to go. And so, long, long way to go for Paige. AJ's a good person to kind of give her that boost. And that sort it's cool. But at the same time, I'm not okay with AJ being Divas champ. I kind of see another reign coming. But I'll be okay if she's not. I like the Paige and Naomi feud. It was very short and brief, but Paige as a heel, I think, can put another layer on it. And Naomi is definitely athletic enough to have a really good match with Paige. So Paige as a heel champ can definitely give the baby faces a good chance to win the match. Derek, what do you think?
I think it was rumor has it AJ's not going to be around much longer. She's having difficulties in the back. Office. I mean, what else can you do with Paige? Of course, she's going to carry on what AJ is going to leave off. Not a bad decision. I was surprised, but I was pleasantly surprised. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Then we have Rusev. Julio, you had something to say about that?
Oh, actually, I'm looking forward to if they follow suit with what they usually do. Natalia has now two victories over Paige, so I'm a big Natalia fan, so anytime she gets the Divas title, I'll be very, very happy, but, you know, I like Paige, so if they can finish off with AJ and then have something to do with either Naomi or Natalia, that'll be something worth watching, I think. Just the athleticism of both of those characters is going to be awesome, I think. So we'll see, right?
I'm a big fan of Natalya, and I'm also a big fan of Paige as far as their contrasting
that should be,
characters.
Yeah, that should be good.
Yeah, I would like that feud. The only thing is that Natalya, it's like the Curtis Axel of the Divas division. Ton of talent, can train everybody in the world, but she'll just be used to put people over. So I don't see her having some type of big run anytime soon. Andy, next batch of questions. So round one, the only person who got theirs wrong is Julio. Next question is, what year, for Andy, what year did Sting win his first world title? What year did Sting win his first world title?
I want to say 1990 against Flair.
Great American Bash, of course. Great job.
Thank you.
Be sure you're – I think he's using the towel that's next to him very, very much right now, wiping the sweat off his forehead.
Mm-hmm.
Next we have Rollins defeating Ambrose, Lumberjack match. A lot of people complain about the Lumberjack match. I still think it should have been for the case, especially since Rollins won. So, Armand – Lumberjack match, was it a good match to you? Are you okay with the stipulation after the match was over?
I've actually heard people say that that was the best Lumberjack match of all time. And in retrospect, you know, it made sense with the director of operations actually directing operations. And, you know, when it still passed him, he told him to go get him. You know, I say all that to say, the match was cool. I wasn't in love with it like everybody else was. But, you know, it set the stage for Monday, which, you know, I'm jumping ahead a little bit. But, you know, all in all, it was cool. I thought it was going to be match of the night, so maybe I'm speaking from a place of disappointment where, you know, it was good, but it wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be.
Ryan, were you satisfied?
Yeah, it was okay. As you know, I'm a big Rollins mark, and this was the typical Rollins spot monkey type match all over the place. Ambrose too, that typical style. It was funny, man, because to me it's just Lumberjack slacking on their job, man. Got to get on that job of keeping the guys in the ring.
Well, here's the thing. I think that the Lumberjack's job is to do the domino spot. That was the whole point.
Yeah.
It was the domino spot. And I think the domino spot was successful, so I think it was an extra type of flair to the match, which made it okay. I mean, the domino spot usually always works. And Armand made a reference that everybody who's at the very end of that domino spot don't even get grazed, but somehow they just fall hysterically.
Yeah.
So
yeah, in pain.
makes no sense ever.
Also, I was a fan of Goldust being the guy to lead the Lumberjacks and getting Kane's face. I know it's kind of pointless, but it's still. I'm glad they chose him, the oldest guy out there.
I liked it, but why
did
Cody
go past
the Goldust
feud last year? Right.
What happened last
What's
year?
What's that?
I'm sorry, I said Goldust getting in Kane's face is sort of a throwback to the Rhodes Authority feud last year, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but for some reason Cody Rhodes went past Goldust, his brother, and he started beating up Lumberjacks like Kane wasn't the guy that he should go for. That just didn't make much sense there.
Stardust.
Yeah, exactly. Andy, Rollins, Ambrose.
You know, I think I probably liked it the most out of everyone so far. I think if WWE ever does get around to a Best of the Lumberjacks DVD set, I think that's going on there.
Lumberjack. And shout out to Damian Sandow, who was dressed as an actual lumberjack. Yeah,
I wish they all would
have
done that better. Yeah.
What are they doing with that character? He was great and they killed him. It's just funny
to
watch.
I think they should make a face. Yeah, I think they should make him face and make him Charlie Haas 2.0 because it worked when Haas did it, and especially when he was Charlie Haas Layfield. That was Charlito. That was hilarious too. and he actually beat JBL by disqualification that match, and it was really cool. He actually, that was probably the most over Charlie Haas ever been, because he's coined the Haas pop, which is just a bland type of why are you here type of reaction, and that was probably his best work as far as getting over. Derek, your boy, your former wrestling mate Dean Ambrose, were you satisfied with his work?
Oh, I was satisfied with his work, and I think that it was a great overall Lumberjack match. There was so much going on as far as the Lumberjacks themselves, the match getting out of hand, and everyone just, it was a free-for-all for a while. But he did great. Rollins did great. It was probably the best match of the evening as far as I'm concerned. And I can't say that it's like, I can't say that it would go on forever, but it was good. There's a lot of aspects there to that match, a lot of it involving the Lumberjack. So, great match. Good job, Ambrose. Good job, Rollins. They made a very good convincing feud.
And surprisingly, it wasn't for the briefcase. Surprisingly,
exactly. That was dumb. I mean, what was the point of the match if it's not for the briefcase?
Yeah, it is.
Well, right now that briefcase is inadequate.
it's not cashing in anytime soon.
Yeah.
That's true.
there was actually some
rumors that Rollins would cash it at SummerSlam. That would have been, that would have been brutal.
Yeah.
If anybody believe that, they're insane.
Yes, side-by-side stretchers.
Yeah, exactly. Julio, you have your redemption. If you answer this question right, who was a horseman first, Luger or Wyndham?
Oh, God. WCW. Luger.
1987. Wyndham, 1988.
Ooh.
Correct.
Ooh.
Good job. Indeed. Yep.
Lucky guess.
So next we have Wyatt versus Jericho. Chat room said Luger afterwards. I think that was real quick. It was a comment up here I saw. There's been a Sabu sighting at Kmart outside Boise, Idaho, eating a corn dog. More details to come. The fun chat room of pancakes and power slams. Next we have Wyatt versus Jericho. I'm not going to start off this. I'll let Andy start this one off.
Wow, Wyatt and Jericho?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it was better than their match last month, and I'm glad that Wyatt went over. Mm-hmm. Still, I feel like it's been some time since Wyatt's just had a fantastic match, and just something about this feud didn't quite click for me. It was fine, but it wasn't that exciting, I think.
No, you agree.
Who else feels that way? Who else feels that the feud didn't click?
I do.
I do.
Definitely. Yeah.
It didn't live up to my expectations. I don't want to say it didn't click all the way, but I think our expectations collectively, we can agree it's Y2J, so our expectations are going to be through the roof. And I think that was the problem. It just didn't live up to the hype. And then plus two with him here and then going, we know it was too predictable. That's why I think Jericho won first and Bray won this time.
Hmm.
Oh, I wonder
anybody
if
else started
to
click. No, it's not over now because he's a Knight of Champions. This is his last appearance, and so he's supposed to go against Wyatt again.
See,
I totally agree. Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with Ryan. I agree partially with Ryan. I agree with Andy more, though, because I did not think that this feud clicked at all. And I'm trying to neutralize myself as much as possible because The world knows I'm a Jericho mark. But at the same time, it's like I was disappointed with Jericho's work, to be honest with you. I thought that I don't know, I guess it's maybe my expectations, like Armand was saying. I think it's maybe, and Ryan was saying, I think it's maybe it's our expectations because of Jericho. But and to me, it was even more escalated because of their match on NXT was so good. And I was waiting for that type of match, and I didn't get it last month or this month. I don't agree with Andy as far as this match being better than last month. I think both matches were about the same, and the only reason why I would edge last month is because of personal reasons, of course, because Jericho won. But to try to neutralize myself as much as possible, I just don't think it worked out. I was talking to Armand, and I was wondering, is it a Jericho thing as far as it not clicking, Jericho not clicking with Bray, or is this really boiled down to a Bray Wyatt thing? And the reason why I think it boils down to a Bray Wyatt thing is because he's been in 4 major feuds since he debuted pay-per-view last month at SummerSlam. And those feuds have been Kane, Daniel Bryan, John Cena, Chris Jericho. And you can throw CM Punk in there with their SummerSlam match between Rowan Harper against Punk and Bryan last year at Survivor Series. But the 4 main feuds, Kane, DB, Cena, and Jericho, the only good feud was Daniel Bryan. That's it. That was the only feud. Would anybody disagree with that?
Well, I enjoyed the WrestleMania match with Bray Wyatt and John Cena. For some reason, it felt like I don't know, the end of the world according to the Bible. Like it seemed like Bray Wyatt was the devil. It was really well written for some reason. Like, I really enjoyed that match, but everything afterwards, he's been... You're expecting him to become this huge star, and they make him lose, you know, or they make him... I don't know, just, like I think it just didn't click, you know? It didn't click. It didn't click. It happens. There was expectations, everything that you guys said, and... I don't know. We put on so much effort, like, into... They put on, like... I'm sorry. What am I saying? People are expecting so much out of these two guys because they're great, and then they just do a little bit less than we expect, and it's a disappointment. But, I mean, I don't know. He's still young, so we'll see, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that he should turn... babyface. I think there's no question about it. He should turn babyface because we're already confused. Because he's not a clear-cut heel or face, it confuses many, many fans. I think it's period. And the reason why he hasn't established himself in a good feud is because he's having all these fireflies type of thing. Everybody put on their cell phones, their fireflies. But he has heel mannerisms, but he has the cheap Mick Foley pop when he says the city before he says we're here. Then he says we got the whole world in his hands and everybody sings along. But then he talks about he hates everybody, including himself. It's like, dude, what? I mean, make up your mind. I mean, are you a babyface or are you a heel? And I think because of that, people are just confused, and I thought it was just me. Armand had a really good story about similar to that, and then I've read I've read comments about that too. After I was thinking that, I was like, wow, I thought I was the only one, but other people feel the same way. Right now, he's confusing, and it's hard for him to go back to the full-fledged heel. So I think you might as well just kind of push him over to a baby face, feud him with someone like a Rusev down the line, and I'd be totally fine with that. I think that'll work out for him. He needs a face run. It seems like they're kind of branching him off away from Rowan and Harper anyways. They've got their own music now. They're competing in tag team matches by themselves. I think they're it may happen. It may happen sooner than we think because they're kind of detaching them, quietly detaching them as we speak. So, Ryan, what month was the last WCW Nitro? What month was the last WCW Nitro?
March 2001.
Indeed. March of what year? If you get this, if you don't know the year, yes, absolutely. 2001. Next, we have the Nikki turn after the Stephanie and Brie match. I knew that this was going to happen. I even think I caught it on the show last week. Let's open it up to floor with this question. Who was not happy with the Nikki turn?
Well, what's the point?
They needed it. They're so different now. They needed it. I loved it. Now, what they do with it, I could care less, but the actual moment was awesome to me. The crowd was into it. It was cool. But, I mean, honestly, afterwards, what they do with it, it doesn't bother me. But that actual moment was cool.
I thought it was great. Stephanie McMahon needs. I mean, that's another authority member to make the authority a little more legit than what they are. It was a fantastic move. I was happy about it. I thought it was – what else could they have done with this?
Yeah, Stephanie is great. Great character. She looks good. She's the boss. The Bella Twins just feed them to karma already. God. Is that so much to ask?
Yeah, that's still out there. That's still out there.
It's still out there.
Is it really still out there?
Hey, she's still known
years
as
later.
Karma on her Twitter, and she has all these WWE links. I mean, she's coming back someday. She's starting to look better than ever, so
she's
your eyes open.
A ton of weight.
Yep, she's getting ready. Man. Someone's going to pay. Those Bella twins, please.
Andy Armand, what'd y'all think?
I wasn't really a fan of it because I don't, outside of Brett versus Owen, I just don't buy into sibling feuds. I just, I just picture them at like Thanksgiving or something and it would be awkward. Doesn't work for me.
Total Divas season 3 starts soon.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Very much.
I liked it again. It was another good moment. That they pulled off because they lost my interest based off of, what happened the next night on Raw. But, keeping in the tradition of SummerSlam, like, I liked it for what it was. Steph looked great. I think she's the best heel on the roster. And she did her job. And I think the match itself was actually pretty entertaining. I actually went back and watched that one. In replaying it on the network. So I wasn't mad at it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Armand. I watched that match again, too, and it wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad match at all. Speaking of that phrase, we're going to get to Reigns and Orton here soon. But it wasn't – I mean, it did its course. It wasn't, catch as catch can. But at the same time, Stephanie hasn't wrestled in over 10 years. And so she didn't look bad at all as far as her in-ring work, and Bree's not a bad wrestler. So it worked for me, and I think the turn was fantastic. I think it added a different element to the feud. I think it made it a better dynamic because – we definitely are not going to see Stephanie in the ring again. So Night of Champions, it just makes sense to have the two people feud against the two sisters feud against each other. And the thing is, you can always flip this around. If this doesn't work out, Nikki can say, it was the authority that made her do it. I mean, this always has a plan B. It definitely can have a plan B if it doesn't work out, so I'm not mad at it at all. Next question goes to Derek. What year was the first King of the Ring tournament?
1985.
Ooh. All right. 1985. You're correct. Who is the winner?
1985.
The winner was 1985. That is incorrect, but you still get the point, though. The winner was Don Morocco, 1985. Don, the Rock, Don Morocco. Next we have Reigns versus Orton, and the negative reviews that this match has is so surprising to me. I watched the match first, and then I read the reviews, and then I watched it again, and it wasn't a bad match at all. And it's so, and I hashtag it on Twitter, microwave marks. You got the marks that once they want this big name to be, you know, the 100% perfection so quick, and it's like, man, you gotta give the guy some time. I mean, if you parallel Roman Reigns' career to The Rock, it's perfect. It's a perfect parallel to me, because when you think of 96 Rock, you know, Rocky Maivia, first Intercontinental Champion, feuding against Hunter Hearst Helmsley, feuding against, I think, the Sultan at the time. It just didn't work out. That was horrible, but he still was getting a push. His mic work was horrible. It was just not good at all. But when you get 97 Rock, when he joins the Nation of Domination, his mic work got better. It still wasn't the best, but it still got better. He didn't really hone in his mic work that good until 98, 99. And that was, you know, about 3 years after he came into the WWE. Roman Reigns debuted, you know, Survivor Series 2012. So it hasn't even been 2 years yet. So it just bothers me when people make so many negative comments to Roman Reigns, because people just need to give him some time. Because, I mean, he's growing. I think he's growing. I think the match was a solid match. I think Randy Orton was the best person to put him in a singles match of that caliber, because as many people, you know, criticize Randy Orton, myself included, as far as his character being so bland, he's a very, very solid performer, and he's proven that time and time again. So I think that Randy Orton was the best person to put him with in that type of caliber feud to really kind of shroud some weaknesses, shroud some weak points that Roman Reigns, shroud some green spots that Roman Reigns had and still has. But I think he's growing at a very good pace.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep. Definitely.
For sure. I was you speak of the microwave marks, I was really shocked this crowd did turn on Reigns. I mean, Orton was so on his game that I was highly shocked. I was just waiting for them to turn on Reigns, and that goes back to your microwave marks. And Orton's just, I mean, I've never not liked Orton. But just him solo as a heel, that's what he needs. He doesn't need to be the authority, little whiny, whatever. This is where he can be the best character, and it helps out the whole roster.
Derek, you're not an Orton fan whatsoever, but were you satisfied with his work?
I was. I mean, it was probably, after the Lumberjack match, this was probably the best match. I mean, Orton put on a spectacular show. I agree with what you say about Reigns. I know you were, a few weeks ago, leading up to this, you were concerned that you're pushing him way too much, and you don't want too much of that. But, I mean, it was an even match. Either one of them really could have won that match, but it still would have been a great match. I'll give that to Orton.
Armand, were you satisfied?
I was very impressed by Orton playing the veteran role, and I don't want to call it carrying Reigns, but he definitely took the lead. You know, he there's small things in wrestling like pacing and, you know, playing to the crowd. And, you know, Orton has been a tweener for so long he spent most of his career as a tweener. So, like, it's really easy for him to, as a heel, do face stuff and get the crowd, and you could kind of see him teetering on that, and you could literally see in his body language, he's like, yeah, let me scale back a little bit because I'm supposed to be the heel. And the maybe perhaps besides the main event, my favorite spot of the night was the Superman punch into the RKO. That was nasty.
Yeah.
That was nasty.
That was good.
Yeah. Kudos to Orton. You know, I still, the way that I think about it, and I'd like to ask you guys this question, is Reigns ready for WrestleMania? Because I agree with Chris, like, you know, let's slow him down for a bit. And I've talked to Chris about, you know, eventually going from U.S. title from Sheamus to Rusev and from Rusev to Reigns and for Reigns to have a U.S. title reign to kind of build him up even slower. But, you know, they want to give him that Daniel Bryan WrestleMania moment, and WrestleMania is in, what, 6 months, 7 months? Is he ready for that?
I want it slow. Super slow.
Yeah.
I wish WrestleMania was, you know, where SummerSlam is, because I could take a full year instead of, like you said, the 8 months, 9 months till Mania. I could, it goes back to the microwave marks. Chris is right. They will turn on him as soon as he gets it. You've seen it happen.
Oh,
as soon as he gets to the
that,
top.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I mean,
that's exactly why I wouldn't want to.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And for nothing. That's
yeah.
why Daniel Bryan's rise was perfect. 5 years, and he worked his way up. It was perfect.
Yeah. Jaleel, you're chiming in.
That's a good way of seeing it. Yeah, I've mentioned that a few times before in the past. I think they for some people, they go too quickly, and then they fizzle out, like the Damian Sandows, all these
Ryback.
Ryback. You know, they or even they tried to force feed us. How many times Alberto Del Rio? You know, he was starting to get like pretty good back in the, like, what was it, 2011 or something. Then they make him win the Royal Rumble, and then since Edge was going to retire as champion, or he did in the back, you know, that was the rumor. They have him win and retain his championship and totally killing whatever momentum Del Rio had at the time. So they want, you know, people want things to go so fast. It's just important to take time. It's like if you hire somebody in a new position, you have to give them time to grow in the job, right? You can't just throw him to the wolves. They won't work. I think slow and steady is going to pay off, just like the Daniel Bryan evolution took some time. We'll see how it goes from now till WrestleMania, but I don't want that to happen. I don't want him in the main event. Just, it's not going to work.
Too quick. Andy, slow build for Reigns or no?
Yeah, slower push, because I think fans just don't like when a babyface, like, you know, Vince's golden child is pushed on him, like Ryback or Batista, you know, when they're like, we want you to like this guy. And it's, you know, there's nothing organic about it. So I think Reigns needs more time to kind of build that. Yeah, I think he needs more time to build up that fan base as opposed to just forcing us on us and being like, this is the next top guy.
I agree.
It's important because the guys in place are getting older, so you really need to build this new next guy and don't fail because there's not that many, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I think that, see, here's the thing. I think it's, and the reason why I said Drew McIntyre, because I think he fits into that Vince McMahon mode. This is the chosen one. We're going to make you guys like him. And I think there was nothing organic about Drew McIntyre's push when he was Intercontinental Champion. Nothing organic about it. And I think that was his undoing. That was his downfall because he has amazing talent. But the problem was they pushed him WWE style, not fans, not WWE Universe style. And it didn't work out for him at all. It's unfortunate. But I think with Roman Reigns, though, I think he might, and I think I'll be okay with this. I think he might get the Ultimate Warrior treatment. What I mean by that is he has the it factor, he has the excitement, the crowd's into him, even the microwave marks are into him because he gets tons of pops. Of course, he gets the little, you know, boos that are being totally out-cheered, but at the same time, I think that he's going to get that type of push kind of fast, but at the same time, slow enough. And we can't, you know, of course, you know, Ultimate Warrior, even though he had that meteoric rise, in a sense, he was still a mid-card champion. He was Intercontinental Champion. Had a fantastic feud against Rick Rude for the Intercontinental Championship. The very next SummerSlam, they main evented for the world title. So I definitely think that Roman Reigns, and I'd be okay with a WrestleMania 6 type thing, Roman Reigns being or U.S. champion and leave world champion. I'd be okay with that.
Yep.
If they really want to make him the guy, I think that they should have U.S. champion go into WrestleMania, Roman Reigns being U.S. champion, and him go against a world champion and win and hold up both titles. I mean, if he's the new face of the company, might as well go all out for it. But he needs that mid-card. He needs that mid-card title, though. He definitely needs that.
They did that with Goldberg, and it paid off.
It did. Exactly. Perfect uh-huh. example. Goldberg beat Raven on the next Raven won at Spring Stampede 98 or Spring Stampede 98 I think it was. Spring Stampede 98 and then Raven had the title for one night and lost it to Goldberg the following Nitro. And I think that Goldberg, him being US champ, he had both titles held up and the Atlanta crowd went bananas, and it worked. It worked for Goldberg for sure, and I definitely think it'll work for Roman Reigns. And it's funny that they both have spear finishers. Well, spear was a signature move for Goldberg, but I definitely see a lot in common between them two. And then we get to the beaten, victimized...
Annihilation. I
love this. Oh, who didn't have Brock Lesnar winning? Did anybody have Cena winning?
Nope. I did with my heart, not with my actual mind.
I think it's unanimous with the entire.
Yeah,
the entire panel had Cena losing. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah.
Yep.
So who was a big fan of the Annihilation?
Me.
Yeah,
probably everybody.
Yeah. I danced for joy. It was wonderful. I could eat it up five more times again.
They needed that. That was a good story they told there. That was, yeah.
True? Is that true that like a certain era ended with this match, or am I crazy?
I would have said yes until the SmackDown spoilers tonight.
Oh, okay. So. Let's not let the listeners know that, but
as of Sunday night at 11 p.m. Eastern, yes, that looked like the end of an era. And they did a great job of one thing I haven't heard people talk about is they covered up the Extreme Rules loss by saying, hey, when Brock in his interview was like, hey, I was only at 50% at Extreme Rules, and he barely won. Mm-hmm. I'm at 100% now, and Cena. I mean, he rolled out of probably the best STF I've seen Cena ever put on anybody, and he just rolled out of
it. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Crazy.
Definitely. Armand, Tully Blanchard's valets were Baby Doll and who?
I'm just going to go ahead and say that I don't know. I'm not even going to play.
Does anybody, anybody want to steal that? Baby Doll and the Black Girl. Who was that?
Sapphire?
Yeah, Sapphire, yeah. Dark Journey. Dark Journey. I would think that Derek would know this, but he didn't know it. Dark Journey was the black valet that Tully Buncher had, and she was quite all right back in 1986. I agree that this Lesnar beatdown was just absolutely fantastic, and I definitely think that. And I wrote about it on Bleacher Report that this should be this beatdown should set up another beatdown, which I believe should be Sheamus, because he's the only guy that looks like he can stand toe to toe with Brock Lesnar. I think he should get annihilated too. I think, you know, of course the streak played into it, although I can still debate that. The streaks played into it well though. Because I think at the end of the day, whoever beats Brock Lesnar would be the talk of the town, and that is exactly the point. And that's who it should be, whether it's Roman Reigns, whether it's Daniel Bryan, whoever it is, whoever beats Brock Lesnar come next year, most likely at WrestleMania 31, that guy would be the guy. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I loved it. I just absolutely loved it. I think it was fantastic. Kudos to Cena, because that's not very Cena-like to get brutalized like that.
Boo-hoo.
And you can tell that he was like, man, even if they were in an MMA match for real, like, Cena would just get devoured, man. It was just really sad. Because I was just really paying attention to the match, and how Cena was trying to kind of maneuver Lesnar into, like, the corner and things like that. He couldn't even successfully do that. It was just so overshadowed. He was just so outpowered, and it was just very, very – it was embarrassing. And I think it was great. But like I said before, there's nothing that the WWE can do. I told this to Ryan. There's absolutely nothing that can be done – to tarnish, and I even wrote this on Bleacher Report, nothing can be done to tarnish Cena's character. Absolutely.
Yeah, when did
nothing at all.
Did we ever figure out what last time he tapped, if ever?
I think it was 2003 against Benoit, I think the last time.
That was my guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, was, not in the hustle, loyalty, respect era.
No.
No, he should have tapped to Brian last year, but, you know, I'm crazy.
Yeah.
Had to protect his character. to protect the character. So, all right, let's zoom through real quick. Just the takeaways from Raw real quick, because I definitely want to get to this flavor of the week here. Basically, on Raw, we saw the main event being Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. Of course, that was the reason why the end happened. But real quick, Nikki, and I'll have just real quick takeaways from every one of you. Steph cuts a promo, brings out Nikki. Nikki cuts a promo that was just really scripted all over the place. She even looked to the back too prematurely. She cuts a promo, and then she tells Nikki, and Bree comes out and tells Nikki that she forgives her. She gets slapped anyway. Show when Henry defeats Rowan and Harper for the second time, beat them on SmackDown as well. Natalya defeated Paige because Paige was distracted by AJ. Lesnar presented the WWE World Heavyweight Championship that's on sale for $429.99 at WWEshop.com. Miz defeats Dolph Ziggler by countout. Cesaro defeats Swagger. Bo Dallas comes out and cuts a promo. Looks like there may be a feud coming up between those two. Goldust and Stardust does the typical, we're going to beat the champs in a non-title match. Lana and Rusev cuts a promo. Mark Henry comes out. This was supposed to be a feud a few months ago, but now it looks like it's coming to fruition. Rollins defeats Ambrose at the end because Kane assists him, and of course he gets curb stomped to a cinder block. Let's start with Derek. What were your takeaways from this?
Takeaway from this was actually kind of when Seth Rollins was against Dean Ambrose. When Ambrose was pinning Rollins, and right before Kane jumped in, Rollins was supposed to be knocked out, and I could see his eyes open up and look back to see if Kane was coming in. Fast forward, slow motion, you can see it, broke kayfabe. That's my takeaway.
Armand.
I love the main event. Thought the main event was great. Good way to write Ambrose off TV. I can guarantee that Rollins cashing in is when Ambrose will come back. That would be the perfect way to return, then continue the feud because, excuse me, there's really nothing else for them. Well, there's plenty for them to do, but Ambrose and Rollins is such a compelling story with so many layers. They can keep it going for a while. I thought it was funny that they just completely ditched the Show Henry tag team in mid-show. No, we were just talking about, hey, okay, here's a good team of big guys. They're not doing anything. They're both – it's the funny thing about Henry and Show is that they're both solid workers. I think that we don't like them because the storylines for them have been terrible throughout their career.
Yeah.
So having them together just being two big guys that beat up other people was great. But I do like – I love Hall of Pain coming back, him not going back and forth with Lana and just telling her to shut up, and you know, effortlessly giving Rusev the world's strongest slam. One more thing, Rusev and his selling needs to be commended because he's been selling that ankle since the beginning of the Zack Swagger feud, and he was even, like, on his tiptoe while Lana was cutting the promo. That was fantastic. The turn, whatever. I think those are my major takeaways. Yeah, those are my major takeaways. Oh, and then of course Heyman with another amazing promo. You know, he made a good point of Cena's been the man for 10 years and Rock and Austin didn't have the ball for nearly as long as he did, and Brock just mercifully, effortlessly ran through him at SummerSlam. So those are my major takeaways.
Very well said. Andy.
You know, I think maybe my favorite line of the year is when Ambrose dumped that bucket of water over Rollins and then just goes, "What? It's for charity." And, like,
right.
Dumped the bucket
yeah.
right off his face.
Absolutely.
So that pretty much made the show for me right there.
Yeah. Derek, takeaways.
Again, like I said, with the Rollins and Ambrose, takeaways. I like Mark Henry and Big Show being somewhat of a tag team take on the Usos. That's believable for those two characters. They've been losers in the past. They've been losers currently. They got to do something with these two if they're going to keep them around. So make them a productive tag team and see where it goes.
Ryan.
Just for me, the main event, it made me smile, man. That's the future. Like 5 years from now, we should be seeing Rollins and Ambrose, you know, maybe at a Mania or something, big titles. And one title belt. Let's see that again. You know how much I've been wanting that back. So, and they didn't tweak it too much. So good. But it's still $429.99.
Exactly. Julio, biggest takeaways?
The promo. Paul Heyman promo. He was so into it that even Brock Lesnar was trying to repeat it, and he was laughing, like he was smiling as if everybody must have been laughing on the inside. It was great to the point. It was just long enough, and it proved the point. Like just the repeating, it got under my skin. It was great, and I'm glad there's a new championship belt. There's only one. That's great, but it looks like crap. So, you know, yeah, I was waiting for that to happen, but I would have liked a more vintage-looking title belt. That was definitely – that whole segment was the best part of my night. And also I had to go with the Miz's jacket. I have to have that. So, you know, I'm looking forward to something happening with Ric Flair and those two guys. So I was glad for that little 2 minutes of pleasure on my side. That was my night, yeah.
All right, we got 7 good minutes for our Flavor of the Week. Real quick, before we get that, my biggest takeaways were I think that was a really good way to write off Ambrose. And then I definitely like the Henry transition, although I think he's not – him being with Show would probably be better because they might – they'll probably win. Him being with – him feuding with Rusev, these moments are cool. But he's just going to put him over. And, of course, I love the Hall of Fame. I love the ad-libs coming back. And the biggest ad-lib that I give Mark Henry is, where's my flag? So I definitely think that really went over. I love the Mark Henry ad-libs. I think he has the best. I mean, especially when he told John Cena, you think it was – oh man, he said, you think it's that easy? I got a lot left in the tank. I absolutely love the Mark Henry ad-libs. Fantastic. I think that's the biggest thing. Hopefully we'll see something with Swagger and Bro Dallas. We see Swagger win. I think the Heyman promo was good as always, but I think it was a little bit too wordy this time. So, all right, real quick, each person get 2 good minutes. Well, about a minute and a half. Our 3 favorite mid-card matches of all time. Julio, go for it.
SummerSlam history. SummerSlam 1990, Demolition versus the Hart Foundation. The best tag team ever in WWE history, like for lots of reasons. Demolition against the Hart Foundation, which have been personal favorites of mine. Great match, perfect ending, setting up some feud with the Legion of Doom. That was a moment for me. Afterwards, ladies match, Medusa or Alondra Blaze versus Bull Nakano for the Women's Championship. Hidden gem, nobody pays attention to women's wrestling really, but I do, and I found that one was really well done and it was excellent for its time. And my favorite match of all time was the first SummerSlam I ever went to, Ultimate Warrior versus Ravishing Recruit for the Intercontinental Championship in 1989. My birthday, 12-year-old kid screaming, going nuts over his best character ever winning the title back. And it was an awesome match. And Jesse Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon, best commentators of all time.
Wow, Gorilla. Andy, 3 matches, 3 best SummerSlam mid-card matches.
My number 3 is probably one of the most ridiculous stipulations of all time. I'll go Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero for custody of
Dominic.
Just absolutely ridiculous, one of those only in wrestling moments. Number 2, I'll go Triple H versus The Rock at SummerSlam 98. Probably a good 6 months. Maybe a year before they were both just big names, just kind of an exciting, fun match. And my number 1 really wasn't much of a match, but it just it was a big moment. I popped like crazy. Ultimate Warrior versus Honky Tonk Man. just like Warrior was kind of born that night into a star, and finally somebody got their hands on Honky Tonk Man. So that was pretty cool moment.
Awesome, Derek.
Hey, I've got. Okay, I want to start with number 1, the number 1 mid-card of SummerSlam ever. But Hitman Hart against Mr. Perfect Intercontinental Championship in 91. The ultimate number 1 best match, I think, of SummerSlam history. I mean, you had Bret Hart, the up-and-comer. You had Mr. Perfect, had the belt. Bret Hart won, but it doesn't matter who won. The match itself was just so phenomenal. I never forgot that match. I hadn't seen that match in years and years and years, but I will never forget it. Then you had Stone Cold Steve Austin against Owen Hart in 1997. Another Intercontinental Championship match. That was Stone Cold's first belt. I mean, it was something spectacular, amazing. He broke his neck that night. That's a shame. But, I mean, again, it was something to really delve for. And I want to say for number 3, it was already mentioned, but I honestly think the Triple H and The Rock, it was a ladder match, 1998. That was beautiful. I mean, and the headliner was Stone Cold against Undertaker. It was Highway to Hell. And when they adopted the AC/DC song as a theme, I mean, that was probably – just everything about that SummerSlam, 91, 98, two best SummerSlams of all time. It's the hype behind it, the matches. It was the full, total package, both of them. You'll never see that again.
Awesome. Armand.
I thought you told me five, but fortunately,
three ain't enough, man. I need five.
Yeah, three ain't enough. I need five. Yeah. Fortunately, two of them have been said already. Perfect and Brett, yes, greatest SummerSlam match ever, and Heart Foundation Demolition, Kid Mark. So my three will be TLC 2 from SummerSlam 2000. I've also got. These aren't in order, by the way. Kurt Angle, Rey Mysterio from SummerSlam 2002, opening match. Amazing match. Amazing match. And my number one, just because I marked over this as a kid, and I just think the story transitioning from DiBiase, Dusty Rhodes, Sapphire, was Virgil and Ted DiBiase for the $1 million title at SummerSlam 91.
I can dig it. All right, since the ladder match of 98 between Triple H and The Rock, Ryan, did you get the, Ryan? It's your turn.
No, but I basically went with the theme of ladder matches. Period. And I guess nobody else will say it, and I just wanted to keep it at that. Ever since everybody else said it, I was just going with the theme of all the ladder matches at SummerSlam.
All right, so let's mine real quick. Since Perfect and Hart was, I think that was the best SummerSlam match of all time. Since that was already taken, I'm going to do two more. And also, there was another ladder match that somebody said too. There were the Perfect and the ladder match was already taken, and those were two of my three. So real quick, I got two replacements, and that would be HBK and Razor Ramon 95 ladder match, their ladder rematch. And then, of course, I marked like crazy when Kerry Von Erich, Texas Tornado, beat Perfect in 1990 to win the Intercontinental Championship. I think that was one of my biggest – that was my markout moment, one of my markout moments. I was a big Kerry Von Erich fan. I followed World Class Championship Wrestling, and when he went over to WWE, I was a big fan. And also – RVD versus Jeff Hardy ladder match 2001. I think that was a really, really good match. I think SummerSlam 2001 was one of the best SummerSlams just because it was the ECW versus and WCW versus WWE, more like an alliance thing. I think it was absolutely fantastic. I encourage all of y'all to watch SummerSlam 2001 all over again. It was probably one of the best SummerSlam pay-per-views. Just because the quality of work was really, really good, especially in the mid-card, because you had all of that roster coming. So, well, thank you all very much. Great time, as always. And the winner of the contest is a three-way tie between Andy, Ryan, and Derek. So real quick, I'm going to ask the question. The first person to pop out the answer is the winner. Who has the most U.S. title reigns ever? Quick.
Oh, boy.
Lex Luger.
Nope.
It's a tie.
Nope.
I got nothing.
Wrong.
Yeah.
The winner, that would be Ric Flair with six reigns.
Oh, wow.
Real quick, all right, next question. Who were the Allied Powers? Real quick, who were the Allied Powers?
Lex Luger and British Bulldog.
Andy is the winner of the of the Stump the Guest Challenge. Great
job.
Right.
Where do I get
thank
the belt?
Thank you all. You get the $429.99 belt that we have. Fantastic. Thank you all so much. That's our time for this week. Until next week, God bless. Have a great week. Enjoy your week of wrestling. And Day Loves Elijah. All right. Thank you all so much. I really, really appreciate it. And we shall meet once again real soon.
Feed me more.
Feed me more. Thank you all, and y'all have a great night.
Oh, yeah. Good night.